I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
We're building bridges. We're building bridges, not walls, to keep our sibling immigrants out or to facilitate an apartheid system to disenfranchise the Palestinian people from their historic lands and to control and strip them of their human and civil rights.
Now, our extraordinary roundtable, No More Genocide in Our Name, No to a Second Al-Nakba.
It is of the utmost urgency for each of us to rise up each day, now, in every way, to stop the mass slaughter of Palestinians, the blood of which is not just on Israel's hands, but on the hands of America as well, as the official death toll in Gaza passes 8,000 and the Palestinian death toll in the West Bank surges.
To educate, agitate, and organize us to stop the genocide, we're joined by
Esther Farmer, a Palestinian Jew, director of Wrestling with Zionism, and co-editor with Rosalind Pachevsky and Sarah Sills of A Land with a People, Palestinians and Jews Confront Zionism, and who is active as a member of the national leadership team of Jewish Voice for Peace. And I must say, you must read A Land with a People, Palestinians and Jews Confront Zionism.
And we're bringing to you as well from the community sphere the voice of Labor, Labor for Palestine, and the organization's co-founder, Michael Letwin, and former president of the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys. And Zaid Abbas Shamrouch, a Palestinian refugee from the Daesh refugee camp in the West Bank, and executive director of the Middle East Children's Alliance.
Thank you all for being with us.
And to stay to act on stopping the war on Palestine, ending the occupation for a free, free Palestine.
No more genocide. No more genocide in our name. I want to bring Esther Farmer into the discussion, and I want there to be a free flow between people. You all are such passionate advocates and stimulate our audiences. But Esther is the co-editor, as I said earlier, of A Land with a People, Palestinians and Jews Confront Zionism, which I think is one of the most tender and poignant books that upon reading absolutely seeps into your heart and soul while informing your mind on the 75-year freedom struggle of Palestine. It's a must-read. Now, Jewish Voice for Peace has become the largest progressive Jewish anti-Zionist organization in the world and has distinguished itself with campaigns such as the historic Not on Our Dime Act, which seeks to penalize nonprofits that are funding illegal Israeli settlements in Palestine. And one of my favorite chants was, not another penny, not another dime, not another dollar, whatever, you'll tell me it correctly, for Israel's crime. And Esther, your plan to end U.S. support for Israel's crime and support Palestinian freedom struggle. And get me right on that chant, because it was not another...
Not another nickel, not another dime.
You got it. That's it. Not another nickel, not another dime, not another penny for Israel's crime. Esther, tell it like it is.
We have been subjected over the last 75 years to so many untruths. One of the biggest is that all Jews support Israel. You know, JVP, Jewish Voice for Peace, has been working for many years to change this narrative, and it's happening. I am very proud of how many people are coming out and saying exactly that, not another nickel, not another dime, and not in our name. Because for us, what it means to be Jewish is that we offer justice, not just us. And that's the spirit that is bringing out young Jews all over the country and all over the world and saying, no, this is not okay. I mean, it's really hard right now not to be kind of very angry at U.S. policy, because U.S. policy is totally complicit in the destruction of Gaza, the destruction of the West Bank, thousands of people killed, and using Jewish pain and angst to oppress another people. And we know very well that when people talk about Jewish safety, I mean, I'm Jewish, I'm concerned about Jewish safety, but Jewish safety will never happen if we are oppressing another people. And that's what's happened in Israel-Palestine. As long as Palestinians do not have rights, Jews can never be safe. So I think that our position in JVP is far more serious around Jewish safety than this idea that we can just bomb the hell out of people and somehow we're going to be safe. So we are saying very loudly and very proudly, not in our name, we have to stop this genocide. That's what it means to be Jewish, and that's what it means to be a human being in this situation. You know, it's kind of outrageous that the policy of the United States, I mean, the United States government has actually said that calling for a ceasefire is repugnant. So we're saying that it's okay just to murder people, to murder 3,000 children, and that's repugnant to call for a ceasefire. Now, it's absolutely true that a ceasefire is only the start of this process. What we really have to do is deal with the root causes of this process, of what happened, is that we cannot keep doing this and expect a different result. So we are changing the narrative. The narrative is changing. I think that the powers that be in this country were quite surprised and are quite surprised at the outpouring of support for Palestinian freedom. And we're very proud to be a part of it, and particularly proud of our partnerships with our Palestinian comrades and friends, because we're doing this together and we're changing the narrative that there can be healing, but we have to take responsibility for what Zionism has wrought in the world.
Well, with that, I just want to also bring Saeed Abbas Samroush, who is a Palestinian refugee from the Daisha refugee camp in the West Bank and executive director of the Middle East Children's Alliance. And perhaps you can begin, Saeed, with giving us whatever current information you have. And I say this as I just was listening to mass commercial-based news, which again reiterated that now they're not even talking about whether they did or didn't bomb hospitals, but they're actually saying we are going to bomb hospitals and that's perfectly okay and so be it. And they are legitimizing that as a target. But what do you hear as director of the Middle East Children's Alliance from your people on the ground?
Actually, what we hear from the people on the ground, it's not that much, because still the communication, we face difficulties. And just we published an email for our list about some of the updates that the people they are going through. But for the updates right now, I hate to bring this kind of statistics, but this is how the world. Right now, the number of the Palestinian people actually increased to 8,306 people killed, among them 3,457 children. And among them, 2,136 women, 20,000 people, they were already injured. And you have around 1,950 people already missed. These people, they are reported and documented, they are missed. Among them, 1,050 children, they are already missed. And as the numbers coming from like this from Gaza, you speak about that people still, they are killed under the rubbles of their destroyed houses. And while I'm talking with you, and I'm honest here, I'm back to the screen, I'm still watching live. I'm watching Al Jazeera. This is the way how we live our days these days. And while they are still bombing in Gaza Strip in this moment, that Israel so far, they are targeted and they already bombed 57 health facilities in all over Gaza Strip. And 12 hospitals already out of service. They cannot do any kind of service for bombing or for they are in shortage of everything. They don't have any possibility, no fuel, no medicine, nothing. And they are not able to do any services for the community. And you have 32 clinics and they are not able. They are destroyed. They are not able to do any kind of services. The rest of the facilities, that they were targeted, still they do partially some services. And I want to say, like, today there are two hospitals, they bombed around them, and they are still giving orders to these hospitals to evacuate. And the response from these hospitals, they call the hospitals and still ask them to evacuate. But they call the hospitals to ask them to evacuate. At the same time, the answer, where we will go? Like, for example, Al-Quds hospital, they have like 14,000 people between the patient inside the hospital, including the premature children, including the ICU patients, including the people they are already evacuated from different areas, and they came around these hospitals to get some services, and they thought it will be secure. And now they are receiving orders, and they are bombing the Indonesian hospital, which is the last. This is the last one. They are still bombing around where you have 12,000 people. They are impacted living around this kind of hospital. Why people they're living around this hospital? Because just some of them to be close with their injured people inside the hospital. Some they think they can get some services, and of course, all of them, they think this is a secure place, that Israel will not bomb hospitals. But right now, according to the people in Gaza Strip, no safe place, no matter where you are. You are in the mosque, where they already destroyed like 45 mosques so far. Three churches, the same, bombed and attacked. No secure place anywhere in Gaza Strip. And I say this all the time, because this is through our talking with our colleagues in the ground. We have our staff members in the ground. We have our partners, our volunteers, they are working in the ground. And for me, like listening to them, and this is the way how I see the people in Gaza survive. They survive on luck, where they are standing, where they are in that second, that moment when they do the bombing. And they survive on the collective spirit. When I say luck, it depends where you stand in your house. If your neighborhoods, yesterday I was talking, texting actually with Michael, one of our partners in Shatta refugee camp, where he shared some photos with me later. We couldn't talk on the phone. They don't have very strong signal. And he sent some photos and he said, thanks. He was thanking God. And he said, he doesn't know how they survived the night, because the way how they destroyed the whole neighborhood around them. And when you look to the photos, it's unbelievable. I don't know how they survived. And the same, they are living with many children. And he told me they were hugging their children, he and his wife, and they are waiting for death. And just they were crying with their children. And it's the moment. And this is sometimes where I say, like, death is knocking every door in Gaza Strip, every house in Gaza Strip, every hospital, every school, everywhere. Even the farms, they are not surviving, where they bombed, where you see some of the animals, they are already killed. So this is what we call it, genocide. And more reports is coming, like when you speak about United Nations, they are coming complaints, actually. I am working in this organization, relief organization, and you find the United Nations, they are doing the same. They are complaining, hey, 63 people killed. We are not able to do our services. So this is the irony, and this is the tragedy, actually. How the United Nations, they are complaining like any kind of, we are just a non-profit organization, relief work we are doing right now in Gaza, and we are complaining the same. To whom? I have no idea. If United Nations, they are not able. Actually, and they are targeted. The same, 63 people already killed in Gaza. What I want to say, I heard some of the introduction, the previous speakers in this program, they spoke about it. When you speak about Nakba and the catastrophe, me, myself, I'm a Palestinian refugee. I was born and grew up in a refugee camp. My family uprooted in 1948. And I look to this kind, what's going on in Gaza, which I heard most of my education listening to my mom and her generation to learn about what happened in the Nakba. Right now, I'm watching a new Nakba by my eyes, but through the screen. And this is like for people in Gaza, 2.3 million people, they need to choose between genocide or ethnic cleansing. These are the two choices for the people in Gaza. And it takes me to another, like, say it, Your death is surrounding us, but we choose the life because we love life. And this is what I hear from people in the ground. People like when we talk with our colleagues in the ground, and still, it's really, really very tough situation for them, where every night they thank they are still alive. And even when they get back to us, like when they say, hey, we are still alive. We passed another day. And this is the reality. Right now, every hour, I know politics is very important. History is very important. But the main demand for us right now, as a human being, as Palestinian, as organization, as political groups, is to stop this genocide immediately. And honestly, we are not doing enough until we do that. We need to stop that, whatever it is. There were experiences in the history about genocide. Right now, it's our duty as a human being. We need to do everything, and we need to do action, organizing, etc. And I'm sure everywhere in every state, they have their own plans and the programs. This is the most important moment for us to do that. Every minute, and there are many reports actually coming when you divide the victims, the children, how many killed, and during the days and the time, every 10 minutes, there is a child killed almost in Gaza Strip. And this is continuous. It's not stopping. While we are talking right now, it's not stopped. So I think we need to do more stuff to stop that. And we need to influence and mobilize and to reach out to try to do our duty and stop this genocide.
And that's exactly where we're going. And we will shortly be talking to Michael Letwin. And of course, all of it is about doing what? Educating, agitating, and organizing. Always to make sure that we say and act on no more genocide in our name, no to a second Nakba. And regardless of whether it's an issue of evacuation or whether it's an issue of refusing that and maintaining the spirit of resistance at all costs, the fact of the matter is we all are here to think about what we do to stop the immediate genocide and for a free, free Palestine. And I know that we have labor in the House, right, Ken?
We sure do. And Michael Letwin, co-founder of Labor for Palestine, talk about the role of organized labor and your call to stand with Palestinian workers to cease the genocide now and stop arming Israel and the companies involved in the infrastructure of the blockade against Gaza. And what do the latest Israeli attacks reflect?
Thank you, Mimi and Ken, for having all of us here. It's an honor. And I'm former president of UAW 2325 and working now with Labor for Palestine and Block the Boat, and also with Jews for Palestinian Right of Return. And I guess the first thing to say, and before I forget, actually, the very first thing I want to say in regard to the action that's happening is the demonstration this Saturday, the national protest in D.C. on November 4th against the genocide of Palestine. And I urge people to consider, if they can, to go turn out for that. And as far as labor is concerned, you know, there's a long and kind of ugly history in this country of support for Zionism and ethnic cleansing by labor officialdom that goes all the way back to the Balfour Declaration and around that period. And unfortunately, it comes not only from the right wing of labor, but even from the left, much of the left wing of labor that signed on to the Zionist project. But there's also a different tradition, and a tradition that not many people know about, that we in Labor for Palestine are trying to uplift. And that's the tradition, especially of Black anti-Zionism and solidarity with Palestine from the 1960s forward, which was deeply, has been deeply intertwined with labor. And that goes to Malcolm X, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, the Black Panther Party, and then with labor in particular, the Dodge Revolutionary Union movement in Detroit in the late 60s, along with the League for Revolution of Revolutionary Black Workers, and especially the West Coast Dockers Union, ILWU Local 10, which has a long history of refusing to handle cargo from repressive regimes, including the Nazis, apartheid South Africa, and Israel. So those are some of the traditions that we're trying to draw on. And right now, we are trying to respond to a call from the Palestinian trade unions, all of them, that was issued on October 16th, that specifically says the following, among other things, quote, "We need you to take immediate action wherever you are in the world to prevent the arming of the Israeli state and the companies involved in the infrastructure of the blockade." And there's a longer statement that that's a part of, but taking that statement and responding to that statement, we already have organized 400 trade unionists in the United States to publicly sign their names onto a solidarity statement from Labor for Palestine, which is titled "Stand with Palestinian Workers, Cease the Genocide Now, Stop Arming Israel. And we urge folks to sign onto that at laborforpalestine.net. It's the top of our website, and you can sign it whether or not you're in labor, but certainly it comes from labor people, and we're trying to get workers to step forward and take a stand. And essentially what we're echoing here is the call that the Palestinian trade unions are calling for is what Ken was referencing earlier, I think, which is that their call says the following specifically. They're calling on trade unions around the world and workers to, one, refuse to build weapons destined for Israel, two, to refuse to transport weapons to Israel, three, to pass motions in their trade union to this effect, four, to take action against complicit companies involved in the siege on Gaza, and especially if they have contracts with your institution, as many universities, for example, do, and five, to pressure governments to stop all military trade with Israel and, in the case of U.S., funding to it. So, again, we're urging folks from labor and elsewhere to sign on to that at laborforpalestine.net. There's also a statement that's being circulated within for UAW members in particular, of which Mimi and I are both among them, to call on the UAW, which has a new and very good leadership, to adopt this call from the Palestinian trade unions and stop the historic collaboration and complicity that labor officialdom, including the UAW, has with Israeli apartheid and Zionism. And if you're interested in signing that letter, you can email us at info@laborforpalestine.net, and we will give you the information. And just the last thing to say at this point is, Mimi had asked me earlier, before we went on air, about this issue of the backlash and the silencing and the new McCarthyism. And of course, all of us here and others could talk about that in general, but I want to just call attention to two examples of that in regard to labor. About a week ago, there was an official of the SEIU, which is one of the largest unions in this country, an official in Connecticut, who was forced out of his position at the union for having signed or made some statement condemning the genocide of Gaza. And he lost his job in what is, you know, a relatively liberal union, but nonetheless a union that has also been complicit, as all of them have been, with Zionism. And then just today I heard that some of our members from UAW 2325, who are an agency called Bronx Defenders, their subunit of our local issued a statement about a week ago, a very strong statement in support of Palestine. And they now are facing a huge backlash, including an online petition, which hundreds of people have signed, apparently organized by court officers and various kinds of Zionists, to demand that Bronx Defenders' contract be canceled for the representation that they provide. So that's just the tip of the iceberg. We see right and left that there are professors and, you know, all kinds of people who are losing their jobs, who are, you know, the woman in the agent in Los Angeles in the entertainment industry who lost her job very high up in that scene. And there's just so many people that are being, you know, viciously attacked and blacklisted basically forever, because they're putting their name out there in defense of Palestine and against the genocide. And so that makes it all the more important not to leave anybody hanging out there on their own, that kind of like, you know, I am Spartacus. Everybody has to be Spartacus in this situation. Everybody has to raise their hand and not let anybody stand alone.
And Michael, actually, tell us again, the National March for Palestine, Saturday, November 4th, which is happening at 12 p.m. in Washington, D.C. We want millions there. Yes, we want millions. Is it possible? Yes, it is, because we can make it so, and we must. We cannot allow another genocide in our name. We cannot allow a second Nakba, not in our name. Michael, tell us about the coordinates or what people can do you. And Esther, if you have any upcoming demonstration activity, we have about a minute for each of you to give us that. What is to be done?
Well, maybe as far as the march on Saturday, there are a number of different websites, but the one I'm looking at right now is peoplesforum.org. And they have it on their website, the National March on Washington for a Free Palestine. It's set this Saturday, as you said, 2 p.m. And the call is Free Palestine, Biden, no more USA to Israel, lift the siege on Gaza now, the people demand a ceasefire. And there's, you know, many different organizations have endorsed, and I think it will be quite large. And, you know, the time to act is now. We have to be out there. We have to do what we can. And for labor people in particular, please do sign on to our statement for Palestine.net or shoot us an email at info@laborforpalestine.net, and we'd love to work with you and back you up.
And make sure you also can go to the website of Jewish Voice for Peace. And we want to thank so much Esther Farmer with the Jewish Voice for Peace, Michael Letwin, Labor for Palestine, and our dear friend with the Middle East Children's Alliance, Zaid Abbas Samrouche. And do what you must do. Do what you can every day, every way for a free, free Palestine. No more genocide in our name. Thank you all for joining us. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
And we are building bridges.